Hello again and welcome to another episode of BitNote. This is David Collins. We'll be playing some great video game music, so have a listen and hope you enjoy. So, a while back, I played some music from the game VVVVVV, or the letter V 6 times. I played the music, I liked the music, so here's more music from the game. Have a listen to Potential for Anything by Soli from the game The Letter V 6 Times by Terry Kavanagh. There you have it, guys. That was Potential for Anything from the game The Letter V 6 Times, and it was by Terry Kavanagh, our own Terry Kavanagh, because of course he's Irish, and the music there was by Soli, aka Magnus Palsson, although there's an accent symbol or a diacritic, as they say, over the A, so I'm not actually sure how to pronounce that, but thank you, Magnus, for a great track for a great video game. The letter V six times, or also known as VVVVVVV, or sometimes V6, was of course a game that harkens back to Commodore 64 era sort of games. It was released only a few years ago. And the whole mechanic is that instead of jumping, you just reverse gravity. So you'd be walking on the ground, and in order to get over an obstacle, you'd flip the gravity, suddenly start walking on the ceiling, walk over the obstacle, flip the gravity again, and walk back on the ground again. There was a nice little plot about, you know, being in a spaceship that crashes into a weird dimension, and then you have to, you're the captain, you got to go and rescue all your squad mates and everything. And there's also a lot of fun stuff about just trying to actually, you know, get the right sort of jumping and the right sort of platforming in order to get to where you want to go. It's a fun game, and it's got some incredibly frustrating bits like Veni, Vidi, Vici, but those bits are like good difficulty bits, and you don't actually need to do those bits in order to complete the game. A lot of games have systems like that. In order for the real challenge, they keep them optional, so the hardcore gamers who really want to push themselves to the limit can go for it, whereas the people who just want to have a good time, be mildly challenged, get to the end of the game, can just go the standard route. It's a pretty common technique, although sometimes it leads to doing a lot of really mindless tasks, like, you know, having all these collectibles strewn about and expecting the hardcore gamers to look for everything. But I wouldn't consider that a game. I just want to say this right out loud. Sort of games which have you looking, like, you know, an egg hunt or a search hunt, or they're not really games. That's just an exercise in just examining the scenery in so many different places. But sorry, that's just my little own rant. The music for the game is pretty awesome. It was released in a volume called PPPPPP, which I assume is also called the letter P six times. And I believe there was even a heavy rock album remix version of this very album called MMMMMM, and I assume it's also called the letter M six times. So if you've any sort of experience with pattern recognition, I think you see a sort of like branding pattern going on. Don't know if you do, but you just might. I'll hit one more track from this game called Pushing Onwards. It is one of the it's one of my favorite tracks from the game, and yeah, have a listen and hope you enjoy. We'll be right back. and what you just heard there was Pushing Onwards. It was by Soli. It's from the game The Letter V Six Times, and it was by Terry, which was made by Terry Kavanagh. A fun little game, should be available on most platforms out there. Go out there and see if you can have a shot at it. Okay. So, aside from the Letters V Six Times, as I've said, it has a very nice kind of retro flavour to it. But why don't we just start to play some actual retro games? And in this case, I want to play a game that I didn't play when it first came out, and I honestly don't think most people did, or at least most people in my country, and definitely not in America. But it was a very, very important game. The game was Metal Gear. Not Metal Gear Solid, that came in the mid-90s, that where Metal Gear came in the late 80s. We're talking about Metal Gear, the very, very first Metal Gear game. Now, if you're not familiar with the Metal Gear franchise, it's been, well, basically that, a huge series of video games. It's noted by a lot of things, especially the use of stealth rather than confronting the enemy head-on, well, at least in most instances, and also the actual auteur who's behind it, Hideo Kojima, who essentially not only like was the brainchild and the proponent of nearly all the Metal Gear Solid games, but he also ended up giving it a distinct flavour, which sometimes is unique, sometimes touching, and sometimes downright weird. Generally, the plot for nearly all the games is, well, I mean, I haven't quite finished through Metal Gear 4 yet, but it's kind of similar. Basically, you are a guy, and you're going on a one-man mission, and in the tradition of like a lot of like American macho like 80s action movies and stuff, or 70s. Indeed, the main character Snake Plissken is obvious reference to the main character of Escape from New York. So essentially, you're basically a single guy. There's usually a terrorist or great big installation going on. You have to go in and infiltrate and manage to find out what's going on and stop whatever great threat is going on. Nearly all the time, it's some great big robotic weapon that's ending up going to completely screw over the rest of the world if it falls into the wrong hands. Although, technically in the game, it's already in the wrong hands. You just have to make sure you take this powerful weapon out of the wrong hands, normally by destroying it, and normally involving that destruction involves you going head-to-head in it in a gigantic boss fight. But before the entire series DNA had been established, this was the first game, the originator, the original Metal Gear. It was released on the MSX, which is part of the whole MSX series of hardware. Essentially, it was Microsoft determined this whole specification for a computer. Back then in the 80s, it was kind of like, computers were kind of like, well, there's a really good example. A few years ago, there would have been like phones a few years ago or something, where there are a lot of different competing products and each one had their own thing. And if you made a game for one, it wouldn't work on the other. And indeed, that's still true to an extent, since if you make a game for the PS3, you won't run on the Xbox. But even then, if you make a game for the PC or a personal computer, it'll run on most PCs. But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. The point was, Microsoft had developed this spec, and a lot of other companies made their own version of the hardware. It was very popular in certain countries, in like a couple of European countries, and definitely in Japan, and that's where a lot of games were made. And it's on this platform that the original Metal Gear game was actually created. It was followed up by one sequel, Metal Gear 2, which I'll talk about in another show. And then what happened in the mid-90s, the whole series was revived with Metal Gear Solid for the PlayStation. This was the game that shot the entire series into popularity, that really set apart everything and like had people getting really excited. Metal Gear Solid was fantastic for many things, including its approach to stealth, its cinematic storyline, although it was pretty heavy on the cinematic storyline, but, you know, with good writing. They actually discussed stuff like nuclear disarmament and, you know, the whole concept of war and pacifism and whether it was the right thing to do. If you want to have peace, then why do you have to fight? Isn't fighting somehow contradictory to the idea of peace? And, you know, it was actually discussed and also shown how war could, like, ruin lives, or no matter how much you want to set one side as the good side and one side as the bad guy, there's always so many interpersonal relationships that screw everything up. And, sorry, that was all stuff that came in Metal Gear Solid. Metal Gear was the first game in the series. It was back when things were a lot more primitive. It's a fascinating game for what you can see, the themes and the ideas that would emerge later in the series, but clearly hadn't emerged at this point. And I could talk a little bit more about it, or I could play some of the music from it. I'm going to just play some track. This is going to include Operation Interlude and also the theme of Terra. Now, just to let you know, The music in this game was composed by multiple composers, which makes it a little tricky to know exactly who did what song. But essentially it was by Iku Mizuanti, Shigeru Takenouchi, Meoto Fukua, and it was from Metal Gear Solid by Konami. So let me just play the track and have a listen. Hope you enjoy. And that was the theme of Tara, mostly. It was from the game Metal Gear by Konami. And the composers were one or more of Iku Minatete, Shigeru Takenouchi, and Motoki Fukurama. Now, as I said, this game was originally released on a platform that I didn't play, and I'm sure a lot of people didn't play. And it was actually kind of weird, because when Metal Gear Solid came out, they heavily referenced both both Metal Gear and Metal Gear Solid 2. So it's kind of it was kind of funny. I was just playing it at a meet, you know, like Grey Fox, and he'd say, "Do you remember this? Do you remember that?" And I'm going, "No, I don't quite remember that. I thought this was the first game in the series," and he's still going on about this and that and everything. And it's kind of funny and kind of annoying at the same time. But there you go. But I did finally get to play this game because with Metal Gear Solid 3, they released Metal Gear Solid 3, and then they released a special edition of Metal Gear Solid 3 called Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence. And this is a trend they do, Konami does, of releasing special editions of Metal Gear Solid games. And in this case, they released, instead of actually releasing extra VR missions or side stories or other stuff, they essentially just released a couple of additional features, the way to control the camera in a more modern way in the actual game itself. And also, of course, they released the original Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2. And that was fun. And then when I bought the HD collection over the Sony PlayStation Network, I managed to get those two games as well. So that's how I managed to get them playing. Metal Gear also has very old school sort of gameplay to it. As I said, it inspired a lot of things that came in later on in the series, such as cardboard boxes where you can hide in them and stealth and underground areas. But it also has a very old style sort of gameplay where, in other words, the game developer creates an entire map, works out a route through it, and then gives it to the player saying, "Okay, work your way through this." And for the most part, that can actually be very tricky. Modern game design doesn't do that often, because it doesn't like the idea that if the player gets frustrated, they'll end up giving up and leaving the game, something that can happen very easily. Less so these days, because now we've got walkthroughs that are easy to search through online to pick it up. But the idea is that games these days really want to keep people playing through to the end, so they end up making it kind of easy. And if there's a really tricky puzzle, they just try to throw in a lot of hints and everything. Whereas with this old sort of game, sometimes you just have to try random stuff and hope that something actually works. For instance, the part I got stuck on, thankfully the only part in the game, normally I'm used to this sort of old school design where you sometimes have to do some counterintuitive things or mess around or go to this area and that will trigger the random event that will help you out. But one of the things I did was I looked around. I was trying to get through to the next part in the game, and I couldn't. For instance, this will often happen. You need a piece of equipment to get through there. Well, where's the equipment? Well, thankfully, sometimes Metal Gear, you can still use your radio and talk to people, and they'll give you advice and tell you where the next bit, and maybe you can get a hint on where to go next. And that's awesome. But sometimes they don't give the hint, and you're saying, "Wait a sec, this is not what I want to talk to you about." You phone them up and say, "Look, I want help with this." And they just give you some piece of advice that they've always been giving you. And you're like, no, I want to learn about this, not that. And it's just kind of frustrating. But the part that caught me was essentially, in order to progress in the game, I needed to take some explosives, blow up a specific set of wall in the basement of one of the buildings. The only problem is I'd already been given explosives and already had to blow up some walls in the basement. So I thought I'd blown up all the other walls. But no, what I actually had to do was, after I blew up the first section of the wall, I had to keep still searching around the side of the wall, keep knocking on all the walls to find a weak spot and blow it up. The problem is I didn't know exactly, you know, which areas of the building did have walls you could blow up and which areas of the building didn't have walls you can blow up. It was just... Yeah, when I finally went online and looked at a YouTube video showing me which section of the wall to blow up, and remember, I didn't even know I had to blow up a wall in the first place, then I was like, okay, I'm glad I looked that up. To be fair, Metal Gear 2 also is one of these moments. It involves you basically unable to perform this action, and you have no clue why, and it turns out it's because you didn't smoke a cigarette in advance to steady your nerves. Yeah. Okay, so, as I said, Metal Gear was actually a really, really nice game. It's really old school, and I just really like games like this, and as I said, it was pretty unique in its own way. I think we're going to hit another track from this game. Here is a track you'll definitely hear a lot in this game. It is called Red Alert. Now, this happens whenever you end up tricking tripping an alarm, which happens a huge amount. And what you then have to do is just make a desperate dash in order to hide so that they don't see you, or more often just jump into the elevator shaft, because for some reason their entirely intensive security system doesn't seem to cover the fact that an intruder might go into an elevator shaft in order to escape. So once you do, they'll immediately give up their entire search. Yes, it's not that realistic, but you know, partially it's gameplay, and part is that stealth mechanics and alerts are something that they worked on a lot over the series. It was pretty awesome and everything. So after this song, I think we'll wrap things up. Thank you very much for listening. We've been playing some great music from The Letter V six times, and also the original Metal Gear video game, which was classic and set so many things in the series, and also a fun example in old game design, and is available, like I said, in the HD versions of the Metal Gear Solid collections, but also in the original Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence. This has been David Collins with BitNote. I leave you with Red Alert. Once again, it's from Metal Gear by Konami and composed by one of the three composers, Iku Mizuanti, Shigeru Takanuchi, and Moetaku Fukuhara. And thank you very much for listening.